Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Dragon Lord's Daughters by Beatrice Small. Narrated by Gemma Dawson. Prologue. Ancient Britain before the Dark Ages. The Enchanter looked directly at Lord Ector.
Arthur may not marry the girl, he said.
But why?
Lord Ector protested.
Her father and I have made an agreement that Lignore and Arthur will wed at Beltane. She is already ripening with his child. It is a good match for a nameless foundling. Lignore is her father's only child.
You should have consulted me first before you made any life-altering decisions for the lad, the Enchanter said quietly.
Consulted you? You have not been back here since the night you brought Arthur to my wife and me as a newborn infant, Lord Ector said. We don't even know who you are. But since you appeared in our hall in a puff of smoke, we assumed you came from the Fair Folk, and it would have been dangerous for us to refuse an emissary of the Fair Folk.
I am Merlin, the Enchanter said quietly.
The King's Merlin?
Lord Ector was impressed, and perhaps just a little afraid. Merlin, half-fairy, half-human, was known to be a most powerful sorcerer. The Enchanter nodded.
I was in Uther Pendragon's service once, but the king died 13 years ago, Ector of Gwynedd. Since then Britain has been at war with itself, as you must surely know. The lesser kings cannot agree on a high king. Now I have called a council to be held in London at the time of the winter solstice, which the Christians call Christ's Mass. The new king will be chosen then by my hand, and you must be there with your fosterling Arthur and your son Kai. You cannot refuse me.
Nay, I cannot, Lord Ector said. But why do you forbid Arthur his marriage to Lignore? What difference should it make to you?
Come to London at the solstice and you will see,
Merlin replied quietly. Lord Ector sighed.
Lignore's father will be very displeased, especially considering his daughter's condition. Tell him that Arthur will, at the proper time, recognize his child, and that neither his daughter nor his grandson will suffer for it. I will personally see that the maiden is given a husband of good family who will cherish her and her child. Tell him that Merlin the Enchanter has made this promise.
I will,
Lord Ector said, nodding, and then he blinked hard, for Merlin was gone. Shaking his head, Ector of Gwynedd wondered just what this was all about. Well, they would know at Christ's Mass, and not a moment before. Now he had the painful task of telling Arthur that he could not wed with Lignore, and the more difficult task of telling Lignore's father. He sighed, and then, calling for a servant, sent for his wife. Maeve came, and he told her of Merlin's visit.
"Are you certain you are not dreaming?" Maeve demanded of him.
"You imbibed a great quantity of new mead with your supper, husband." She gave him a small, fond smile.
Ector sighed again and drew his wife down into his lap.
"I was not dreaming, lass," he told her.
Her plump weight on his knees somehow gave him comfort. She was a good woman, and they had been wed for over 20 years now.
"So it was old Merlin himself," Maeve said.
"Oh, I wish I had been here. And he has plans for our lad, does he? I wonder what they are. 'Tis unfortunate about Lignore, but if the Enchanter says he will make it right, then he will. You must tell Lord Evan as soon as possible."
"And Arthur?"
Maeve shook her head. "Tell Evan first that he may tell his daughter as we tell Arthur. I see no reason why they should not remain friends. They have a child in common. I will come with you to Evan, for he has a hot temper like our own Kai, and he prizes Lignore greatly, especially as she is his only child." But strangely, Lord Evan was not angry.
"From the moment I gave my consent to the match," he said, "I have been troubled each night with terrible dreams. Now I understand why. This marriage was not meant to be. The Enchanter says he will personally choose a good husband for Lignore.
one who will cherish her and her child, Lord Ector told his old friend. If I cannot have Arthur, then I want no other, Linior said, entering her father's hall. I do not need a husband to be happy. I will raise my son alone, teaching him to be the good and honourable man his father is. Does Arthur know?
Not yet, Maeve told the young woman, who was to have been her daughter-in-law.
Merlin says Arthur will acknowledge his child.
It is a son I carry, Linior said calmly. I intend naming him Gwydir. Arthur's fate must be very great that Merlin himself is involved.
It was Merlin who brought Arthur to us all those years ago, Lord Ector said. Though we did not know it at the time who he was, but when a man appears in your hall in a rumble of thunder and a puff of smoke, you do not argue with him or ask his name.
You will go to London at the solstice? Lord Evan asked. Merlin has commanded it. The High King will be chosen then, he says.
I am to bring Arthur, and Kai will accompany us as well, Ector replied.
You'll not leave me behind, Maeve said sharply.
The two men laughed, and Lord Ector said,
Nay, wife, I will not leave you behind. You shall come with us and see the new king crowned.
So Lord Ector and his family travelled from their keep in the north of Wales to London in time for the solstice. The closer they got to the ancient city, the more crowded the roads became. It seemed that everyone in Britain was gathering to see the new High King chosen by the great enchanter Merlin. Ector and his party were fortunate to find a single room to share in a small inn within the city. The men-at-arms who had travelled with them had to content themselves sleeping with their horses in the stables. On the day of the choosing, Kai, Arthur's older foster brother, discovered that he had not brought his sword with him, and he wished to wear it to the council. A warrior was not properly dressed without a sword.
Go find me a sword, he told the younger boy.
Where am I to find you a sword? Arthur demanded. I have no money. Do you think someone will just give me the loan of a weapon because I ask it?
Kai cuffed the boy irritably. 'Tis your fault in the first place, he scolded Arthur. You are in training to be my squire.
What kind of a squire forgets his master's sword? If we were going into battle, I should certainly be at a disadvantage, shouldn't I?
But you aren't, Arthur argued. We're just going to stand among the crowd and see the new High King chosen from among the 12 lesser kings, Kai.
Kai knocked his younger companion to the ground with a hard blow, and then, standing over him, growled,
Find me a sword, youngling, or I'll give you such a beating that you'll not walk for a month.
Arthur scrambled to his feet and stumbled from the inn's courtyard, his head throbbing from the blow. Kai had a foul temper, and it was no use arguing with him when he got like this. He wasn't going to find a sword for his elder, but he could at least keep out of the range of his fists until it was time to leave for the choosing. He hadn't wanted to come to London, but they had told him he was not to wed with Lenore after all, and he was instead to come to see the new High King chosen. He didn't understand why that was so important, or what seeing the new High King chosen had to do with his marriage to Lenore. But there was to be no marriage now, and no one would explain to him why. His foster father had said bluntly that he didn't know himself. It had just been ordained by a higher authority. Suddenly, a bent old man, leaning heavily on his staff, his black cloak covering him from head to foot, sidled up to Arthur and said,
You seek a sword, young master, do you not?
How do you know? The young man said, surprised.
Go into yon courtyard, the old man said, pointing with a bony finger, and you will find what it is you seek.
Then he hobbled off down the street, seeming to disappear before Arthur's very eyes into the mists of the morning. For a long moment the lad debated, but then he decided that nothing ventured, nothing gained, and wouldn't Kai be surprised if Arthur did return with a sword for him? Striding into the grassy courtyard, he saw a large boulder, and thrusting forth from it was a great sword with a bejewelled hilt. Upon the stone were carved the words, Who pulls this sword from this stone is Britain's rightful High King. But the boy did not see the words. He saw only the sword. Kai was going to be very surprised. He chuckled. Reaching out, Arthur drew the weapon from the rock.
"Now you will come with me, Arthur, son of Uther Pendragon, High King of all of Britain," a strong authoritative voice said,
and the old man with the staff stepped from the shadows of the courtyard. Arthur turned.
"Who are you? And who did you say I am?"
"You are the only son of Uther Pendragon and his wife Igraine, who was once wife to Gorlois, Duke of Cornwall," the old man said.
"Nay, old sir, you are mistaken. I am Arthur, younger son of Lord Ector of Wales," Arthur responded politely.
"You are Ector's fosterling, Arthur Pendragon. I brought you to him myself the night you were born. He knew not who I was," the old man replied.
"Who are you?" Arthur asked, curious now.
"I am Merlin the Enchanter," was the answer. "And 'twas I who placed the sword in the stone and put a spell upon it so that only the rightful king of all of Britain might take it. All the lords of this land have been here before you to attempt to draw this sword forth from the stone. All have failed. 'Tis you, Arthur Pendragon, who is Britain's rightful high king. Now, put the sword back into the stone from whence you drew it, and wait for me while I go to gather the lesser kings. You will then take the sword from the stone a final time before witnesses and be proclaimed High King."
"Is this why I could not wed with Lynior Merlin?" the young man asked.
Merlin nodded.
"You have your fate to follow, my lord, as Lynior has hers. She will give you a son in the spring, and from him will a line of Pendragons be born down through the centuries."
"Lynior's son cannot be king after me," he didn't understand.
Merlin shook his head.
"None will follow you, Arthur Pendragon, though you will have one other son. I cannot prevent his birth, though I would if I could, for he will be a curse. Nay, Lynior's son must remain unknown to all but a few that the Pendragon line continue. You have half-sisters, Arthur, the daughters of Gorlois, Morgays, Elaine, and Morgan. They are magical creatures who will seek to revenge their father on you and yours. To keep Lynior's son safe, you must keep him hidden, even as I kept you hidden with Ector all these years, so that you might live to follow in your father's footsteps."
Arthur nodded slowly.
"I understand," he said, feeling as if the stone that housed the sword was now upon his shoulders. He knew suddenly, and with great insight, that his boyhood was over, that the life ahead of him would be filled with adventure, passion, pleasure, and pain. There would be great successes and equally great disappointments.
"You will stay with me and guide me, Merlin, won't you?"
"I will remain with your majesty as long as I can," the enchanter said, a small smile touching his wintry features. "And no matter what happens, my blood will flow down through the centuries. Forever and ever, my lord, you have my promise,"
Merlin answered quietly. Arthur thrust the sword back into the stone.
"Fetch the lesser kings, then, that I may prove myself their high king."
"Yes, my lord,"
Merlin replied, and he hurried off. And so Arthur drew the sword from the stone in the grassy courtyard a second time, before all the lesser kings of Britain, and was proclaimed High King, though there were some who were not happy. His reign was a great one, as Merlin had predicted, but the daughters of Gorlois, his half-sisters, were a constant thorn in his side. The eldest of them, Morgan le Fay, a powerful enchantress, seduced Arthur, who had never met her, and conceived a child by him. Their son, Mordred, eventually became the downfall of his father's kingdom. But in the mountains of North Wales, Lynior, daughter of Evan, raised Arthur's eldest son, Gwydra, in secret, protected by Merlin's sorcery even after the ancient enchanter disappeared. And through Gwydra and his wife Eres, daughter of Odgar, who was the son of Ive, king of Ireland, the line of Pendragon continued down through the centuries unscathed. Part 1. Averil. Chapter 1. I shall marry a great lord, Averil Pendragon told her sisters as they sat together in their father's hall. Her golden head nodded emphatically with her pronouncement. You shall marry the man our father chooses for you, her sister Maya said. And he shall be a great lord, Averil repeated. Perhaps, Maya said, but he could as easily be an old merchant to whom father owes a great debt and wishes to pacify, or mayhap a knight father wishes to bind to our service. Your dower will be small, Averil, for though you are the eldest of us, you are still naught but a concubine's daughter. My brother Bryn and I are the true heirs, Maya concluded loftily with a satisfied smile. But I am the most beautiful of us all, Averil shot back. Everyone says I am the fairest of our father's daughters. My beauty shall not be wasted on some merchant or simple knight. I may be the daughter of a concubine, but our father loves my mother, and so my value is great. You are the most beautiful of us all, their youngest sister Junior said with a sigh. You are both very beautiful, and I am so plain. You are not plain, Junior, Maya said. You are simply young.
I am, Junior replied. You have such rich red hair, Maya, and you, Averil, are descended from the fair folk and have hair like spun gold. My dark hair is so common, she sighed.
But your features are exquisite, Averil remarked. You have the most perfect little nose and a sweet mouth, Junior. As for your hair, it has the blue-green shine of a raven's wing. It is hardly common, sister.
But I am a concubine's daughter too, Junior wailed. And the youngest? What sort of dower will I have by the time I am old enough to wed? Father will probably have to match me with an old merchant. She began to cry.
Now see what you have done with your proud boasting, Averil snapped at Maya. You have made the baby weep, and if we cannot stop her, we will be punished.
What about your boasting about being the most beautiful and marrying a great lord? Maya demanded to know. Reaching out, she pulled Junior from her stool and into the comfort of her arms.
There, there, chick, do not fret. Father loves us all equally. And we will all have grand dowers and great lords for husbands, I am certain, she stroked her little sister's dark head.
Really? Junior sniffed softly.
Of course, you goose, Averil said impatiently. We are the Dragon Lord's daughters, and descended from King Arthur himself. Even today our ancestors' memory is still strong. But because I am the eldest, I shall be wed first, and I will be 15 next month, sisters. I think it is time for me to be matched. Most girls are wed younger than 15. Dar just doesn't want to let us go.
Junior's tears faded away.
I did hear our Dar speaking with the Lady Argyll about matches a few days ago, she said innocently.
Maya's arms dropped from about her sibling.
What did my mother and father say? She demanded to know.
There were no names spoken, Junior replied.
But what did they say? Averil pressed her little sister. They had to have said something that piqued your curiosity, Junior, else you should not have mentioned it.
They said the time had come to consider marriages for you both. Father said he would follow the example of our prince, the great Llewellyn, and seek among the Marcher Lords for suitable husbands for you. That's all that I heard, I swear.
What did my mother reply? Maya wanted to know.
She agreed. Nothing more. You know your mother, Maya. She is so kind and soft-spoken. It is rare that she disagrees with our father. My mother says we are fortunate in her, for another wife might not be so thoughtful of her husband's concubines, or allow them to live in the keep with the lady and her children. Junior finished.
My mother says if the Lady Argyle had been able to bear her children sooner, we might not be here at all, Averil remarked. Then she turned her attention again to the prospect of a husband.
We must listen more closely, sisters, she told them, for we shall be told nothing before it is engraved in stone. We shall have to learn everything for ourselves.
The three heads nodded solemnly in agreement. Several days later, however, Averil overheard something that displeased her greatly. Her father was considering making a match for Maya first because she was his legitimate daughter. Never before had Averil Pendragon known her sire to put one of his children above the other, no matter their birthright. And worse, he would make no overtures towards any family until Maya was 15, which was a whole year away. I will be 16 by then, Averil considered, and too old for a good match. She sighed and began to think what she could do, but she could think of nothing. She kept this knowledge from her sisters, but she did speak with her mother, Gorowin. Gorowin was as beautiful as her daughter was. They shared the same pale golden hair and fair skin, but Gorowin's eyes were silver in colour and Averil's were the light green of her father's. All of the Dragon Lord's daughters had green eyes.
You were right to come to me, Gorowin said. Your father can wait no longer to match you with a husband. You are more than old enough, but if you must tarry until Maya is wed, who knows how old you may be? Certainly too old to attract a good match. I will not allow your beauty to be wasted on some insignificant family.
He has never before put her before me, Averil said, her tone irritable.
Gorowin laughed softly and patted her daughter's hand.
He has always been more than fair with you all, and Argyle too, but this is different, Averil. There is no avoiding the fact that both you and Junior were born on the wrong side of the blanket.
So was our ancestor Gwydra, the founder of this house, Averil muttered.
I know, her mother replied, but this was centuries ago, and Gwydra was a man. It is different for lasses, daughter. My birth was true, but I was one of five daughters. There was no dowry for me for either a husband or the church. My father, Arian ap Tewydra, was more than willing to give me to Merin Pendragon as his concubine.
He knew your father would treat me well, and I should be safe for the rest of my days. He made your father swear on his ancestor's name that the children born of our union would be well cared for. And you have been, Averil.
Why did you have no other children, mother? Averil asked. I did not want to give your father a son when Argyle had not. She is a good and patient woman, but even good and patient women have their limits. Easebale gives us all enough difficulty.
But Argyle did give father a son, Averil said, but only after many years of marriage. That is why he took Easebale for a second concubine. However, she birthed Junior, much to her annoyance. But then she is a foolish woman. If she had birthed a son, he would have been overshadowed by a legitimate brother, for Argyle managed at last to have the son, who is your father's heir. Easebale would not have been happy to have any son of hers forced to take a lesser role.
You both might have had more daughters, Averil said slyly.
We might, her mother answered, but we did not. Then she laughed. I will tell you when you need to know, daughter.
Will you speak with my father? The girl asked.
Eventually, Gorowin said. Your birthday is not until the last day of April, my daughter. I do not want your father aware of what you heard, or that you were eavesdropping when he and Argyle were discussing your fates. Let me handle this in my own way and my own time. You will, I promise, be wed before Maya.
I believe you, mother, for you have never lied to me, Averil said.
You must learn to cultivate patience, daughter, Gorowin chided gently.
I will try, Averil promised, and her mother smiled.
Good. You want to show your father that you are ready to leave his keeping and be a good wife to a husband, Gorowin said. Your behaviour must never shame us. Then Gorowin dismissed her only child and considered how to deal with the situation with which Averil had presented her. The truth was that Merin Pendragon had kept his two eldest daughters too close for too long. Avril and Maya should have both been matched earlier and their marriages ready to be celebrated. Her own child would be 15 at the end of the month, and Maya would be 14 on the 14th of May. She smiled to herself. Once the wheels were set in motion to match Avril and Maya, she was certain that Easebale would begin demanding equal treatment for her daughter. Junior would be but 11 on June 2nd. There was time for Junior. First Avril, and then Maya. Maya's match would be the better one no matter, but Merin would see that Avril was given a good husband. Her daughter would have a good dower portion. She would not have to be a concubine like her mother, Gorowin thought, satisfied. She arose, and calling her serving woman for her cloak, Gorowin went out into the spring day. The courtyard of the keep was quiet, but for the poultry scratching about in the dirt. Several dogs slept in the sunshine, and by the kitchen garden, her destination, a fat tabby dozed amid the new greenery. She shooed him awake and away, and taking her knife from her robes, began to cut some herbs. If she was to have her way about Avril, she must get Merin into her bed. Of late, she noted, his manhood did not rise to the challenge of her womanhood as it once had. He was no longer a young man. He had wed Argyll late, being 30. He had been too busy in the service of Llewellyn ap Iorwerth, called the Great Llewellyn, who was his overlord and lord of almost all of Wales. It was Llewellyn who had finally sent him home and told him to marry before it was too late. So Merin Pendragon had returned to his keep. His parents were gone from the earth, and he realised the prince was right. He needed a wife. He had found a good match in Argyll Urch Owen, daughter of Owen ap Dafydd. Argyll had been 15 when they wed. But to her distress, she could not seem to conceive a child. After 4 years, Merin had brought Gorowin into his keep, and 9 months later, Avril had been born. A year later, Argyll had brought forth her first child, a daughter, Maya. But after that, there was no sign of another child. Gorowin knew well how to prevent conception, having been taught by her grandmother, a wise woman. She had prevented another pregnancy in order that Argyll might have time to conceive a son for their shared lord. After a while, Merin grew impatient and brought another concubine into their midst. Easebale conceived immediately and birthed Junior. Gorowin saw that her grandmother's potion was fed to Easebale that she not birth a son, and she prayed to the gods both old and new for Merin's seed to take root in Argyll's womb again, and that it be a son. Her prayers were finally answered in the summer that Avril was 6, Maya 5, and Junior 3. Argyll birthed a son on the first day of August. He was a healthy child who was called Bryn. After that, there were no more children born of Merin Pendragon's seed, and as the years went on, the master of Dragonlair's keep began to lose interest in his women. Now and again, however, Gorowin could lure him to her bed and help him to gain pleasure. It was usually when she wanted something badly, for Merin Pendragon was no fool, and she would not shame him. So when that evening she murmured an invitation in his ear, he had smiled knowingly and nodded. Gorowin was awaiting her lord. She had a tall oaken tub brought to her chamber and filled with hot water. Now having undressed Merin, she climbed into the tub with him and began to bathe him. He grunted with pleasure as she scrubbed his back with a boar's bristle brush and a rough cloth. She picked the nits from his greying head and washed his locks thoroughly. "Where have you been sleeping?" she demanded. "You are flea-bit on your back. You need a new mattress, my lord. I shall tell Argyll." "Do it yourself," he said. "She is morose of late and can take no suggestion. She weeps at nothing. I do not understand it. She is not breeding, I know for certain." "Perhaps her juices are drying up," Gorowin suggested. "'Tis a sad time for a woman to know she may never again bear life in her womb.
You and Argyll are the best of friends, and make my life pleasant," he said. "You would think kindly of my lady."
He pulled her wet, naked form against him and kissed her heartily.
You're a good lass, Gorwin, mother of my eldest child.
She stood quietly in his embrace and smiled.
You are good to me and to our daughter, my lord. But come now, and let us get out of the tub. I have a fine...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?